Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But, you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. It's Wednesday morning, the first day of March, 2023. Good morning, everybody. I'm Scott Micklin. Thanks for tuning in to KSJE Today, 90.9 FM, over the air, of course, here in San Juan County, New Mexico. In Durango, Colorado, we're broadcasting all the time, of course, at 103.3 FM. And if you're listening anywhere else, you just have to go to our website and tune us in there from our stream at ksje.com or ask your smart speaker to play KSJE, and it will do just that. We also want to welcome our viewers who are joining us this morning because, of course, this is a community-supported visual radio station. And so we welcome our viewers who are watching this program live as the video streams out to the KSJE Facebook page, our YouTube channel, and our Twitter account. We're glad that you are with us this morning, everybody, because coming up in the next few moments, my guest today from the Farmington Electric Utility, Hank Adair, is joining me this morning to talk about energy prices and increases in local electric bills and why those increases could have been larger than they are and some of their long-range plans for the electric utility system. So join us for that important conversation coming up in the next few moments right here on KSJE. Then, of course, later on this hour, we will hear from Ron Price, part of our Life in the Sandbox series. And this week, Ron is talking to us about how to deal with difficult people in difficult situations. And so hope you'll stay tuned for that coming up at 8:50 a.m. on KSJE this morning. Mick Hess will take us roving with the arts after the news at 9 a.m. He has a triple header for us with music from Astor Piazzolla, of course, the great Rachmaninoff, and Mozart coming your way on that special 90-minute version of Roving with the Arts on Wednesdays, because that will take us to 10:30 and right on Four Corners, our local and regional author program. Delcherie Gladden is speaking this week with Durango author Scott Graham about his latest book, Saguaro Sanction. You'll hear that conversation today about that book today at 10:30 on KSJE right here. Outside our studios here at San Juan College, there's a winter weather advisory in effect for the Farmington area through tomorrow. We are expecting a mostly cloudy day today, windy with increasing chances for snow showers today. The high today may make it up to 45 degrees, but we'll see. It's 33 right now. A good chance for snow showers today, about 50%. Overnight, continued snow with a low of 33, and then snow continuing tomorrow on Thursday with a high near 44, another 50% chance of snow showers, and then clearing up Thursday night with a low of 22. Mostly sunny skies return on Friday with a high of 43 and upper 40s by Saturday and mid-50s with lots of sunshine for Sunday. Here's a look from the National Weather Service on what they are forecasting through tomorrow. And as you can see, maybe 2 to 3 inches of snow here in the Farmington area, certainly a lot more elsewhere in the higher elevations for sure. Speaking of which, Telluride, Colorado, is getting some light snow this morning. We can take a look over there as the snow is falling just a few moments ago and snow covered Telluride. That's the main drag there in Telluride, Colorado Avenue, just a few moments ago with some light snow flurries falling. 21 degrees currently in Telluride with their forecast high today of 27 after an overnight low of 18. We are seeing images from Durango of complete snowy conditions from the camera on top of Smelter Mountain, so we're not able to show you anything besides just a gray picture, but it does appear to be snowing in the Durango area this morning as well. Joining me this morning to talk a little bit about the Farmington Electric Utility and some of the things we're seeing on our electric bills, Hank Adair is here. He is, of course, the director of FEUS. Mr. Adair, welcome back to KSJE.
Thank you, Scott. Glad to be here.
Good to have you here. Gosh, there's been a lot going on since we last talked, a little bit about, I think, power demands for last summer. And, of course, since then, the San Juan Generating Station has closed. The city of Farmington has announced that it is no longer pursuing the agreement with Enchant Energy. And so all that maybe impacts you and your job to a certain degree and the utility, right?
You bet. It affects us short term and it affects us long term on how we do our plan. So a lot has happened over the last 6 months. Absolutely. Right.
But in the meantime, you're still keeping the lights on, and your crews are out responding in all kinds of weather. They're almost like the post office, right? Neither rain, sleet, or snow will keep you from going out to fix stuff that gets knocked over, I guess, right?
Absolutely. I think I would say that our unsung heroes are our line crews, right? They go out in the worst weather. The worst weather is when they respond to keep the lights on, if you will, just like we had last week.
Yeah, I wanted to show a picture from last week's snowstorm. This was one of the scenes looked like, and crews are out. It doesn't matter, right, if it's raining or snowing or sleeting or 80-mile-an-hour, 60-mile-an-hour winds, whatever, right?
We're out there responding, right? Because it's so critical in those times to keep the lights on, to keep the homes heated. And so
sure.
Our crews are what I call, again, our unsung heroes, right? So when poles start to drift, when the wind starts to blow them over, or when you see damage that happens just like the stories you're seeing of the poles down or poles that have caught fire, we're out there responding every minute to get them back on as quick as possible.
Right. And I think, again, for customers of the utility, they should know that you have a pretty good reporting system on your website that can show the area that there's an outage maybe. So if someone's not sure if you know about an outage or whatever, they can go on that on your website and see if you've got it noted, then they know that you've been notified.
Absolutely.
And you have crews responding.
Absolutely. If you go to our FEUS, our website, you scroll down in there, you'll see FEUS outages or outages, and you can click on that. It'll pull up and show you where we have maps of outages. That lets you know that our system control operators, kind of the coaches, if you will, are dispatching crews and responding. So,
right.
And we've seen a lot of interesting things, you know, things that normally stay to the ground with gravity were caught up in that wind, trampolines and sheds and kinds of interesting things during that outage.
And those and electric lines don't always mix very well, do they, when
no.
they come into contact with each other? So that would explain some of the outages, I suppose.
You can seize those challenges till we remove them.
Right.
And then trees as well.
Trees are
always a challenge with wind blowing trees over or tree limbs down.
Or branches, for sure. That's very true. Mm-hmm. And I suppose in a perfect world, you would have redundancies throughout the entire system, but that's really economically unfeasible, isn't it, to try to have redundancy for every circuit, every line as you're going out?
We do, but what you'll actually see is our system is designed, and so sometimes it'll trip off and not have as many customers out. So the system will find a fault and isolate from it. So instead of having 1,000 customers down, we'll only have 20 or 30 down. We'll use things like fuses and reclosers and things like that protect the bulk of our customers. So we may not have redundancy on every exact system because we're very rural and at 1,700 square miles, but we have redundancy as much as we possibly can. And then we have designs to protect to keep the amount of customers down as minimal as possible.
Got you. And is that mostly an automatic system, or does that involve some human intervention to see what's failing and how to maybe limit it as much as possible?
Some are automatic. That's what we call our reclosers. Sometimes you see the lights blink, right?
Right.
So you
sure.
say, what was that light blinking? And that's when the system opened on a fault and seen if the fault would clear and then close back in on itself. Because oftentimes if a tree limb blew quickly and fell back down, it can open and then close. And you say, the lights blinked. If we see that open and close 3 times, then the circuit will say, we have a serious problem, and it'll leave it open. So if you see the lights blink, that's probably a fault, and our system designed work to keep that outage from happening. And then if you see it go out all the way, then it's like, hey, something's really wrong that could hurt equipment. And so then the circuit opens and we have outages.
Got you. And I just want to ask you another question about outages. And that is, I guess, trying to determine actually what's going on. Because obviously folks maybe can tell that their lights are off.
Mm-hmm.
But for your crews to actually go out and then discover what caused it, they may have to go walk the line, I guess, right? Almost literally to see where that break is or where the pole fell down or whatever it is, right? It could be in the middle of the desert somewhere.
It could be in the middle of nowhere, right? We're
yeah.
very rural. So when we have an outage, there's certain predictive tools that kind of tell us a location to go to a recloser, something like that, to a different location. And so, but nonetheless, our circuits are very big and we have to send crews out. And that's oftentimes what you'll see. We don't know the cause of the outage yet. We need to go respond. We need to troubleshoot. We need to walk the lines, drive the lines. Well, then we find the problem. And then oftentimes, once we see it, we can isolate the problem and get half our customers back on and then fix the problem and get the other half on. So when you see we don't know why, oftentimes we don't until we get out there and really see what happened.
It's an actual boots on the ground type of situation.
Absolutely.
That you have to be able to be out there in person,
mm-hmm.
in the rain, in the mud, in the snow, in the whatever.
Yep. Sometimes even the rain gets so bad we can't even hardly get to places, right?
Sure.
Our washes run so high, we'll have to wait till washes get lower so we can cross to get to the problem.
Got you. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the size of the service area in passing. I just wanted to kind of point out that the service extends beyond the city limits of Farmington. You provide your company, or the utility, pardon me, owned by the city, provides electricity to the majority of San Juan County, does it not?
It does. Pretty much the entire of San Juan County, just not what's on the western side on the Navajo Nation. So we supply pretty much all of San Juan County, portions of Rio Riba County, on the western portion of Rio Riba County, and actually to the south end of the Navajo Nation, and portions of the Navajo Nation on the eastern side of the Navajo Nation as well.
Right.
1,700 square miles, basically a small state.
That's a lot of territory to cover. Of course, Aztec has its own.
That's correct.
And so there's a little pocket there that you don't have to worry about as much.
That's correct, although we do supply them power at the transmission level, so we need to make sure their power is transported to them.
Gotcha. Very good. Well, I wanted to ask you, too, a bit about people's bills and electricity bills these last few months. I think folks have noticed a change, and it's certainly something that I know no one likes to pay higher prices.
No.
And it's part of what's going on in both the local economy, the regional economy, and I would think the global economy, right? All these pressures are kind of pushing on all utility companies, are they not?
Absolutely. We've seen it very heavy in the West, right? The Western Electric Interconnection, or our Western grid. And we've just seen volatility across, you're spot on, across the United States and even across globally, right? With the way the war on Ukraine has affected gas production and gas supply to Europe, LNG exports, you know, the United States is now number two.
We're talking natural gas and LNG liquefied natural gas,
right? And so natural gas prices and energy dynamics, and then the amount of generation that's available has changed over the last decade, and that's made the market more volatile.
Gotcha. And there's a graph that I pulled from your Facebook page, Mr. Adair, a little bit about the price of natural gas over the last year or so, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we can kind of see how it's been kind of just running around maybe $4 or $5, maybe $8, until all of a sudden, boom, it's up to, what was it, $32.97, $33, which is quite the difference.
That's a little bit of a surprise there.
And I know all the producers here in the San Juan Basin who are in the natural gas market probably love prices like this, but that's not so much for the customers.
That is not, and it's a challenge, right? And so the market bears what's there. And so in the West, and based on the San Juan Index, which is where we buy gas at, a lot of what happened in California with Aliso Canyon having the issues it had, so there wasn't a lot of natural gas storage in California. Also, there was a pipeline that had an incident in Arizona, and so that pipeline has been down, so less transport into California. And that pipeline and what Californians buy, as well as us, comes from that same market. And so even though that's exciting for our gas producers in the area, the gas producers I've talked to, nobody expected $33. I can tell you that even the governor and a senator, the governor of California and the senator of California, have asked FERC to investigate the high gas prices in the region. But that gas price is also transferred into purchase power, right? So gas, as coal plants have went down,
right,
then there is less capacity in the market, less types of resources to generate electricity. And so now gas generates three times higher than coal has in the past, right? As coal has went down, gas has went up. Renewables have went up as well. But even if you took all renewable resources from biomass to hydro to wind to solar and combined all of that, gas still generation is three times as much as that production together. Now, that's going to change in the future as more generation comes online, but that'll tell you gas ripple effects right now into anything and everything we have.
Right.
And for us, we also have a gas plant, and
mm-hmm.
it's our flagship unit. And we have a consumption, or what we buy on the market, is 12,500 MMBTU per day. So for some people, that would say, what does that really mean, right? So if you took 32,000 homes and how much gas they needed a day to heat their homes, that would be the same as us buying gas for our generation facility. So a very large volume for what we generate. So one, it cost us a lot more to generate electricity from our own resources, and then that gas price ripple affected into the market for purchase power.
Got it. And so that would have impacted bills last month, this month a little bit maybe, but as we can see, the line is going down.
Mm-hmm.
And for folks who are on the radio who can't see the line going down, it's as of January it was $33 roughly, right? In February, the price was back down to $11.49. So shows it heading in the right direction, I suppose.
It is. And normally what you see in what I call the shoulder months, where you have less heating and cooling days, March, April, May, you see less consumption. And so, you know, market dynamics, right? Supply and demand, as the demand goes down, supply goes up, prices should go down. And so I think we're optimistic about what we see in the shoulder months. But what we're really trying to do right now, and why our rates will stay up for a little bit, is we've got to pay the bills for that $32.97 for January.
You didn't pass all that along to the customers when you incurred it. Is that what you're saying?
Not at the instant it happened.
Right.
What the utility has done is we've buffered our bills by paying from our cash reserves. We have money that is for volatility just like this that we've saved for the utility. But over time, we have used those cash reserves down. And so we don't have enough to cover all of those bills to recover. We did have the cash to pay the bills, but we need to get that cash balance back up to a comfort level for that next volatility that's going to happen in the market.
Like a savings account is what you have.
Exactly.
To be able to pay that. And so as we go to the next graph, this is the purchase power prices. And so I guess this is the amount that you would have to pay to buy power off of the market in this region of the country. Is that the idea?
It is.
And to add to what you're generating on your own. Is that the idea as well?
That is correct. And so with San Juan Generating Station, you know, we kept that project, had our plans, hoped to continue it with Enchanted Energy, had very low agreements were purchase power pricing, and you can see from the graph, you know, they've been averaging over $80 to $100 for the last few months. Our purchase power agreement for San Juan would have been around $38 a megawatt hour for our ownership. But with us not being successful there, as we're trying to build new generation, we have to be in the market short term on a real time day to day basis, and then look at long term contracts to buffer us until we can get that next generation resource built.
Gotcha.
But if you look, September with the heat wave we had, I've never seen prices for energy as high as they were in September. And then that trickled into the winter months and gas prices increased. And now we've seen kind of a lasting high purchase power price. It's been in the $80 to $100 a megawatt hour. So based on that, we made some assumptions on which purchase power prices would also be in the future. And that's why we had to raise rates a little bit until we build, if you will.
Got you. And so, again, these are more short-term pain, I guess, for some folks. And we have to be honest that there are folks who this hurts a lot, right, that are, yes, having to deal with higher electric bills, and maybe that's not in the family budget. And so I'm sure you understand.
I do.
And I hear from a lot of folks maybe who want to let you know what they think.
And I don't disagree with that, right? We're doing everything we can to lower those prices as quick as possible. We're looking to state legislation to help us out, similar to what PNM received for when San Juan plant retired. We're looking for all kinds of grant funding and any opportunities that are out there to help defray what these costs are as we build this new generation.
And I was going to ask you, you mentioned PNM and what they were getting from the retirement of the San Juan Generating Station from their point of view, because they were the main owners of the plant. And now that the other project has gone away, it kind of leaves the Farmington Electric Utility, I don't want to say holding the bag necessarily, but your plans to get power from that facility are now off the table. And so you're looking to the state legislature to maybe help with recouping some of those costs, I guess, or some of that investment that you had made?
Absolutely. So right now, from San Juan Station, and we invested debt-free into it, and we have undepreciated assets out there. When the Energy Transition Act happened and transferred, PNM got a benefit from that for their undepreciated assets and their financing. So there was a, what I would call help, or you could have another term for it, during the Energy Transition Act. All we're asking for is the same thing from the state, to recognize the municipal and, frankly, the most locally and most acute impacted by San Juan going away. We haven't even talked jobs, tax base, etc., but we're closer to it than anybody else.
Sure. And because this is a public-owned utility, a governmental-owned utility, the rules are just a bit different maybe than they are for PNM and
are.
Others like PNM?
Mm-hmm. And they are, because really that's a luxury of us being public power, right? We're governed, and frankly, governed locally by our city council. We have advisement from a utility commission, but it's local. It's made up of that 1,700 square mile service territory, so we have a commission that's represented well beyond the Farmington city limits to give us advisement, and then the council for decision making. So that's our governance, and so it's a little different. I think it's better for us in the long term. Historically, public power has better reliability and lower costs. I would say that's been over the long term. The short term is a challenge, but we'll get through this, just like we have this city and this utility and this community has in the past.
Well, and I know the city boasts, with good reason, the low utility rates that it's able to offer to residents and businesses who want to relocate here. And that's been one of the main drivers and I think the main goals of providing reliable power at an affordable price or a competitive price. And that still maintains, that still, I think, is some of your main missions moving forward, is it not?
It is. I mean, that's our long-term goal. I think you're going to see changes as a whole in the utility industry, right? As more of these long-term high load factor base plants go away, you're going to see more volatility in the market. Now, what we'll do is adjust just like we have in the past, right? I think what we have as a utility is has had the mindset of own it and build or create our own destiny. And with San Juan going away, that has been a major loss for us. And so now we need to recover that. And that's what our integrated plan looked like. When we said, hey, let's look at goals, we said, let's be less exposed to the market in the long term. The problem is, it's just going to take the time to build all those resources out. So here in the short term, we'll have agreements, we'll work through it, and then get back to where we're at before.
Those agreements, those power purchase agreements off of the grid, I guess, from other generators, right? Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. And so if you looked at what we call the stack, right, we have a certain load. Today's load would be 120 megawatts, let's say. And so we have so much generation that we build, and so our own, and so we generate from that. Then the next layer of that would be long-term purchase power agreements, and they would be for a long duration. They could be 1 to 5 to 10 years, and that's your long-term purchase power agreements. You don't put all your eggs in any one basket, and then we buy day-ahead power, which means we buy today for tomorrow on the market this morning. And then any dynamics we have, let's say compressor or industrial load changes, then our operators that are manned 24/7, then they adjust and buy and sell power on the market, mostly buy power on the market to cover our load for the day to make sure we're whole for our customers.
Got you. And so most of the power that the Farmington Electric Utility generates for its customers on its own comes from the gas plant that you mentioned.
Correct.
And some hydropower as well. And some of that, I guess, is at Navajo, Lake Navajo, and also at Lake Powell?
Lake Powell, right. So I would say right now with our resources, our gas plant generates about a little over half of what we need to serve our customers in any given year. Then we have our hydro plants at Navajo Dam, very low cost energy, I'd say low carbon footprint's a good way to say it. And so that generation plant accounts for about 8% of our load. So now we're up to about 58%. And then we also have a long-term agreement with Western Area Power Authority for hydropower, which they do to municipals. And so that accounts for about 7% of our power. And so you add all those together and you get about 65%.
Right.
Previously, San Juan was about 20%. So that put us at about 85% buying on the market, 15%. Now we're at 65% buying on the market, 35%.
A lot more exposure to those market fluctuations.
We do, and that's why we got to fix that quickly.
Right, which is what you're working on. Mm-hmm. And I know, I believe there was some information that came out about an infusion of money. Again, you mentioned from the savings account, right, to kind of buffer some of those increases, and that's what we're talking about, right? That exposure to try to limit that for customers?
Absolutely. So as you see from the spikes of the graphs we just talked about from gas and purchase power, there's more volatility in the market. Back in the day when there was more capacity, I hate to say back in the day, but in the years past when there was more generation, you would see less dynamic in the market, less volatility. The more you have non-dispatchable resources, the more you have exposure to gas, the more that things have happened. Even small changes in the market have a drastic change in prices, which exposes our customers. So we have to dampen that. And some of that's building our own and setting up long-term plans.
Right. And so that takes us to what you were mentioning before, that integrated resource plan, which is something all utilities have to do. PNM did it when they mentioned that they were going to shut down or get out of the coal power business and things like that. Farmington Electric Utility does it. And so this was from a presentation, I think, made to the City Council back in September.
Correct.
Of your integrated resource plan, the Farmington Electric Utility, where you talked about, I'll try to capsulize this as best I can, but please correct me if I'm wrong, 8 possible scenarios moving forward long term, maybe the next, what, 10 years, 20 years or so?
About 18, yeah.
18, okay. Mm-hmm. And just kind of talking with some assumptions and maybe some other goals in mind of, again, reliability and affordability and some of those different things, and then what it might mean for ratepayers and the city and things along that line, how much investment and things along, all, taking all that stuff into consideration. Is that a fairly good synopsis?
You covered it quite well, actually. Okay. Well done.
Okay. Well, good. Phew. And so on the screen is a pretty busy graph, but it goes through the eight scenarios that that you studied, and this was out of a very long report. I don't remember how many pages, but I think at least 30.
Oh, it's yeah, it's
of the PowerPoint at least. The report's longer, I'm sure.
Much longer, right?
But yeah, and so, but if you can see the colors on the graph, the idea is in the columns, green is more favorable and red is less favorable, and this is kind of what you were presenting to, I imagine, the city council and other stakeholders.
Correct.
About what you think you need to do going forward, I guess is what I'm trying to set this up as. And so I guess initial thoughts to me is that you need to generate more power locally. Is that with the loss of San Juan?
Right. And I think that was our goals, right? But when this integrated resource plan happened, we didn't know whether San Juan would continue or not. So we built portfolios whether San Juan continued, which would go till about 2037. That's the assumptions we made. A lot of that was based on the tax credits related to carbon capture. The other was San Juan retired in 2022, and we built scenarios, which the scenarios had different portfolios about how much generation to build, how much to buy on the market, et cetera, et cetera. And from that, then it was built, and then we quote-unquote what I'd call stress tested them. You do Monte Carlo analysis, and they do what-if scenarios, and 200 scenarios on each one of these portfolios to find the one that's the best well-rounded for it. And from that, two portfolios came to the top, and one was the San Juan 2022 requirement. I'll just focus on that right now, because San Juan, we've agreed, is we're no longer continuing. So San
right.
Juan's not continued and getting ready for demolition. So that San Juan 2022 case, and I call it plus or minus 15, that's limiting to buying or selling on the market to 15%. And that's the scenario with high commodity pricing, which makes sense right now, because commodity prices are high with natural gas. And that scenario rounded out with the best benefits for the utility to give us a game plan.
And so for folks who are watching, that would be the fifth column in this graphic here with the colors, not the one with the arrow at the bottom, right? The second arrow.
The second arrow at the bottom.
Pointing up. Not the first one.
The second one, right.
And so that's the one you're referring to, which is the one that stressed out to be the best scenario moving forward. Is that the idea?
And meet all of our goals, correct.
Got you. And so with that then, what does it say about generation? That you need to, mm-hmm. the utility needs to build some more power plants or solar fields or whatever, or maybe all the above, right, I guess?
It does, and what I'll talk short term. What it says long term is we need to build an awful lot of generation in the next 18 years based on even a flat but even slight load growth. But what it says in the short term, and I'll focus on that between mm-hmm. now and 2025, is we need to build about a little over 90 megawatts of generation. The first we would build would be called reciprocating engines. They work at high elevations, they're fast dispatchable, they're very efficient, and build about 18 megawatts of that. We're already in the process. We have completed the scope of work, and we're about to go out for bid to build that generation here within the Farmington city limits at our current gas plant. We have space for it. We have gas supply.
So that would be another natural gas generating facility.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And what we need too, that integrated resource plan also includes building 30 megawatts of solar. And so between now and 2025, if we build that much solar on our system with the load I just told you, the peak load today is 120 megawatts, we need some gas that can respond and ramp up and down based on the electricity production from those solar plants as we build them.
Gotcha.
Now the production is, when I say build, let me rephrase that. So when I talk solar, we would like to build ourselves, and the new Inflation Reduction Act has direct pay, which helps nonprofits just like us to drive pricing down for solar. But we also want to compare us building compared to somebody buying and supplying us that same resource, right? There's benefits to both of them. So if the price is right, we may buy it instead of build it. But that's what we need to put in our portfolio.
Gotcha. You wouldn't own the solar field. You would buy from somebody who already put the investment in, I guess, is what you're saying.
That is correct, like a purchase power agreement.
Right. But there are some maybe financial incentives, I guess, from the federal government these days that might entice you to do your own.
Absolutely.
If the dollars work out, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's what I say is if we build ourselves, call it the build option, a lot of the Inflation Reduction Act and direct pay gives tax incentives to nonprofits just like ourselves. And so there is more incentive than there ever has been before. And so now that makes us even more competitive compared to building in the buying in the market. So we're going to weigh either one of those options. And right now we're looking at real estate, frankly. We've had our owner's engineer that's working with us actually look for different sites for solar. And then we also have several solar companies that are looking to build in our service territory, and we'll weigh both against each other.
Right. We certainly know that the New Mexico, especially this area, is highly rated for solar, mm-hmm. As compared to other parts of the country, of course. And so it makes sense that maybe that's something that would be looked into. I think the other issue that I always hear about is the storage, and that's still something that's a bit challenging, I think, for on a large scale, like you're talking for a utility like yours.
It is. And so if you look at that integrated resource plan in the short term, it has the reciprocating engines, the solar, and then also building another gas plant called a combined cycle plant, which is half gas turbines and half steam turbines. That's what's in the short term. In the long term, though, we have, if you look at that same portfolio, it has wind in the mix, right? Getting some wind resources, and also does have some storage resources. But we need to let the technology advance to the point where that comes into the best play. And the stress test, as I would call it, said do that in the future years, not in the initial years.
Gotcha. That's not your priority, I guess, short term at the moment.
That is correct.
And wind, would that be local wind? I've always heard that our area is not so great for wind, even though it seems like, especially this time of year, it is really good for wind, but not maybe year-round.
You're right. If I was to ask today as I was walking in here, it would be a good day for wind.
Right.
But if you're talking 365 days a year, it's not. So that wind would come from different imports or would be exported from somewhere, imported to here.
Gotcha.
On transmission lines. And so there's some projects in eastern New Mexico, mm-hmm. that are showing promise that would have transmission lines that would come through the Four Corners region because we have a pretty good hub for transmission. Those are the projects we want to see come to fruition that may have an opportunity for us to be a part of.
Got you. And is your goal ultimately to get back to that 85% or a bit higher? I mean, I guess maybe some might be asking why wouldn't they want to build 100% and not have to buy anything off of the grid, I guess.
Mm-hmm. The trick with that is, as a municipal, even though I said we're a very big service territory, there's not a lot of customers in our service territory. There's only 45,000 customers. If you overbuild that much capital, it's going to cost us too much in expenses, right? And so
if the demand goes down, you've got all this power that maybe you can't sell to anybody else. Is
right.
That the idea?
And that's the challenge, right? And you have all the capital expense that goes with it. So you need to balance what the utility has for a balance for appetite for what it can afford. Just like I talked, our cash reserves we used to help our customers, as much as we possibly could before we raised rates. We don't have the cash available to do it without debt expense to build this new generation. So we need to balance that debt expense against everything else. And you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket.
Gotcha. That makes sense to me, of course. And so with that being said, let me ask you a bit about the advance of solar and private property solar panels and things like that. We talked about that before, I know, and, mm-hmm. and you have a policy for homeowners that want to do solar, right?
Right.
And that's something that continues as well, is it not?
It does, and we talked about our IRP, but also a big thing we did in 2022 was we completed a cost of service study. And with that cost of service study for what I call residential solar or behind the meter solar, we modified our rate structure, right? We took away the standby service rider and then modified that structure. With that, we've seen a lot of benefit and interest from our community. I would say in the year 2022, once that change happened, we've seen a 20-fold to 40-fold increase. I would say 20-fold that have actually built,
okay,
and 40-fold that have actually applied, right? So you have so many that apply, not all of them build, they evaluate it, and maybe they want to wait on their finances. But a 40-fold increase on applications and a 20-fold increase on actual installation. So we're seeing a lot of interest. I see 5 or 6 applications a week.
And I suppose as this grows, and we expect it to grow, I'm sure you do too, right, that more individuals and maybe businesses may add to their generation. And if they're providing power back to the grid, that helps you ease some of your generation requirements as well. If you're able to pull some power from these homeowners, it's maybe a little tiny bit, but it certainly might all add up into something significant over time.
Every little bit helps. You have to be very careful with that design and what comes back from the customers. You don't want to get into nodal issues where there's too many solar panels on one line, let's say. But it does have benefit, and we buy back from our customers and then pass that on. The challenge again with that is it's non-dispatchable, so I get it when I get it and I don't when I don't. And most all customers, even our solar customers, want that power at 1 o'clock in the morning as well. So that's the difference between energy and capacity. I have to have the capacity to cover at 1 o'clock in the morning, but I need the energy for all 24 hours of the day. And that, hopefully that made sense.
Right. Well, I think so. And some folks may say, well, I don't need that much power at 1 o'clock in the morning, but maybe if you have electric heat or electric air conditioning, you might want that at 1 o'clock in the morning.
And it's a balance, right? And so what do you call that is peak shaving. And so that has a benefit. As solar comes in, you don't want to get as extreme as the duck curve of California, but it can have a balance. Just like you've seen in our integrated resource plan, a little bit of solar can have a balance as long as you have the things that back it up to cover that 24/7, 365 operation.
And those natural gas facilities allow you to maybe ramp up and ramp down the demand as you need it, or the generation as the demand ramps up and down. Is that the idea?
That's the exact case. Right, they're dispatchable, they get adjusted to what it is for our any given day.
Got it. Very good. Just a couple minutes remaining this morning, Mr. Adair, but I wanted to ask you to predict maybe the summer. You got enough power for all of our air conditioners and swamp coolers and the demand that may come if we have another hot summer, you think?
I would say we don't have it because we're buying on the market, right?
Okay.
We do have bids out on the market right now, or requests for proposals for long-term energy. What I would say is, even though we're a large public power utility, we're still pretty small. And I tell people often, knock on wood, you know, barring some extreme case like the California wildfires or something, I think the power will be there. I just think it's going to be very expensive this summer. And so that you might still see on your electric bills. Now, let's see where our bids come in. Let's see how gas price is trending down. And those will be the things that play into it. So.
Okay.
I don't think you need a generator at your home just yet, but you might see your electric bills still stay high for a little bit to get through summer months.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And by high, I mean, give me some idea of what we're talking about, 5%, 10% than what we're used to, or higher than that?
I would say where it is right now. You know, we recently put it on our Facebook page, we had to raise rates on our PCA, or power cost adjustment, is at 6 cents. That's going to stay that way for some time. And a lot depends on whether these bids come back low for purchase power.
Right.
If we get any additional help, let's say call from the roundhouse, right? Anything we do there is going to help lower rates. Everything will trickle. There's a lot of what ifs there. But I'm expecting purchase power prices to be a little bit expensive this summer.
Okay.
Similar to what we had last summer.
Gotcha. Well, we'll have you back to explain all that to us, maybe in May or something. We'll see.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Mr. Adair, thank you very much for coming in. Hank Adair, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much. It's Hank Adair. He's the director, of course, of the Farmington Electric Utility, my guest here on KSJE. KSJE and San Juan College present the Student Success Coaching Tip of the Week.
Hello, this is Emin Chi from the Student Achievement Center. This week, we're bringing you coaching tips of the week for week 7. Taking good notes. Studying starts in the classroom. Pay attention and take good notes. So when you're studying later, you're just reviewing information. Speak with your professor about recording lectures on your phone. A recording can complement your notes so you can go back and re-listen to the information in case there are other details you pick up on later to note. Effective note-taking strategies can have a direct impact on your study habits and is one of the most important study tips for college.
The Student Success Coaching Tip of the Week, presented by KSJE and the Student Achievement Center at San Juan College. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.